DJ on those sick beats right there.
DJ Bechtold.
DJ Bechtold on those beats. You know, I always wondered if I could be a DJ, and I always knew that the answer was probably no.
You think you couldn't pull it off whatsoever?
Well, I always look at those DJs, and I'm like, I see them turning the dials and, like, how they're spinning them. Yeah, but then I'm like, huh.
Can it really be that hard?
Is it really that hard, or it just confuses me.
It puzzles the brain.
It puzzles me. Welcome to Baldwin and the Berg today, February 12th, Friday is the date today. Of 2021, Austin Bechtold, Nate Breisinger, Andrew Gulvash alongside with you. And we got some big news that is going on in the world of the Steelers as Marquise Pouncey has decided he no longer wants to be a part of the organization, at least as a player. Pouncey retires after 11 seasons, being a first-round pick in 2010 of the Steelers. Really successful career for Pouncey. Won some really prestigious awards, a couple All-Pros. Lots of Pro Bowls. I know of our. We're not the favorites.
Doesn't hold a lot of value.
Well, we're not some of the biggest people of Pro Bowls here, but Marquise Pouncey, what a great career that he had just in the city of Pittsburgh.
I mean, both Pouncey brothers ended up retiring today.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's kind of sad. Two great linemen who both had really solid careers and good seasons. I mean, Pouncey Marquise Pouncey, not as much, but I mean, he still had put up a respectable season in that part, and it's sad to see him go. I really thought Ben was going to convince him to stay. Yeah. I thought he was going to be able to do it.
Yeah, the Pouncey twins, they were out of it, out of football now, and it's pretty unfortunate that, you know, it transpired this way for Pouncey. Injury is really starting to derail his career later on in his career. And we saw it just in the playoff game against Cleveland. He just didn't have it anymore.
Didn't have it.
No.
Yeah, he had a tremendous career, but also I think injuries just sort of hurt him throughout his career from having a much better career than what he had. I mean, a broken leg during the 2015 season, he missed the entire year for that. He had knee injuries left and right. He was just battered and bruised, which hurt his career in the end.
He didn't really play a whole lot of full seasons.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he was sort of like Ben. Ben always goes down every once in a while, and that's what happened with Pouncey, but nonetheless, he had a great career, so.
Yeah, he would miss games here and there. I mean, overall, though, a really, really good, solid career now. You know, the Steelers have had a legacy of centers going back to Mike Webster, Demonte Dawson. Now Marquise Pouncey really is the three mainstays, is the most popular names in that topic. But when I look at it, obviously this team needs to do something to address the key position players, the key core position players. Does this turn attention now, though, to having to go back and draft a bunch of offensive linemen early on in the draft? Now you look at Cleveland. And their offensive line is basically built because they have the best offensive line coach in football in Bill Callahan. Where you take Wyatt Teller, who nobody wanted, off a practice squad, make him your guard, and now he's the best guard in football in the eyes of many. It can be done if you have a comparable offensive line coach. But when the Steelers let theirs go in Munchak a couple years ago to Denver, I don't know if you can bank on just
drafting a lineman.
Well, I don't know if you can bank on just a coach being able to develop them. You got to be able to have an offensive line built on talent and built on skill, and maybe that means going up in the top of the draft and having to get them. Now, I know you got Kevin Dodson in the fifth round to be able to, he'll probably slot in as your starting left guard. You're looking at DeCastro at right guard. Maybe his play was down because he had to help out Pouncey so much. But the way I look at it is you're going to have to replace Villanueva at left tackle. He's done. He's probably going to retire as well. Right tackle, Okorafor was, I guess, fine.
At best.
This is the position, or at least the core structure of the team that probably needs addressed the most out of any. Obviously, you need a running back. You're not going to bring back James Conner, as known on this show, because of his frequent injuries.
Frequent inability to stand the field.
And inefficiency. So You got to address offensive line. Now, I still don't know if you do that in the first round because of that ability to find offensive linemen anywhere. Be able to plug and play them. I just hope that this new offensive line coach that they promoted will be better than Sean Surrett, because Sean Surrett was awful coaching this offensive lineup. I think you probably need to address it early. Now, when I say early, I'm thinking second round.
Second or third, give or take. One of those rounds would be fine to go start looking for linemen.
Considering you're going to need a center and you're going to need a left tackle, unless you keep Matt Filer, maybe kick. He can't play guard. All right, no. Don't try to convince yourselves that he can be your starting left guard. He should not be.
He should not be.
Maybe you move him out to tackle. Maybe left tackle. Maybe right tackle. And then find another guy. You have to add two starting offensive linemen this year.
No matter what happens. Either, no matter what happens at the end of the day.
Either in free agency or the draft. That's just what you have to do.
Yeah, I think either way, you have to find someone who can also slate in and fill in those roles as a starter. Don't find a guy that, I mean, the guys are going to compete for the starting job, but you have to find someone who is more likely to be NFL ready. You can't go, I think Dodson was sort of a gem later in the draft. And he was able to fill in right away or once he got the time. But you need to find some guys who are ready to be in there and compete on any given Sunday. So,
yeah, because, I mean, you could tell just the offensive line was okay. I mean,
no one ever talked about how good the offensive line was.
No, because they weren't.
Yeah, because they weren't.
Because they weren't. They were bad this year. And part of that is Pouncey's downfall and inefficiency this season. And, you know, part of that is all the injuries that he's had to deal with. It's hard to play offensive line and be able to consistently stay on your feet, especially with all the injuries that you may deal with. But I think, like I said, you gotta bring in a tackle and you gotta bring in a center. I don't like what they have depth behind them to be able to add to. So you're gonna have to add a lot. And some of it might be long term guys that you're gonna need to plug and play. It could be a stopgap guy that you play for a year or so and you let it ride and you see what happens, but what you just got to do is you got to find a starter.
You got to do what you got to do.
Find a starting center that's going to be capable of playing pretty well. You're not going to find the next Marquise Pouncey right away.
No. I mean, he was the cornerstone of the line for the past 10, 11 seasons. And you can't just replace a guy like that, you know, that easily. It will take a couple years before we find someone who can fill that role, but I think we do need to address the center position.
Yep, skilled, talented, all-around good dude, Marquise Pouncey, retires from the Steelers after 11 years. Like I said, lots of Pro Bowls, lots of All-Pros. I believe it was two. I think he was the first team All-Pro twice and second team All-Pro three times. Was looking for the numbers exactly.
First team All-Pro, 2011, 12, and 14.
Yeah,
so three times. Second team, twice.
Great career. I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer, but I think he's got a case. Not sure. You see, it's so hard for centers to get in, and it took Dermonti Dawson so long to be able to get into the Hall of Fame. So I'm not exactly sure if Marquise Pouncey will get in, especially because he's probably the third best center in Steeler history. But it's definitely, and you know, no Super Bowls. Sometimes that, you know, makes somewhat of a difference. So the 2010 first-round pick, 9-time Pro Bowler, 5-time All-Pro, 3-time first team. 2010, he was on the All-Decade team for the 2010s, and he was also on the All-Rookie team in 2010 as well. Great season for him in 2010 to begin his career, and he capped it off in 2020 with a not-so-great year like a lot of other people had. But what a time to be alive for J.J. Watt. What a terrible situation he was dealing with in Houston, where Jack Easterby ends up going from lower level dude who is like a preacher of the Texans. I'm not exactly sure. I might be messing that up. But now he's like an executive in the top of their front office.
My God. What a mess it is.
In the span of a couple years, the Texans organization is being considered
a joke.
Lackluster. A joke, a running joke. They are, I don't even know the correct word. The terminology for the Texans is they've choked away so much in terms of talent, and now their best player wants out of town, and they just ran their 3-time defensive player of the year out of town at his request.
They ran the best player the franchise ever had out of town.
At his request.
You know it's bad when one of the more respectable guys in the league is fed up with his own organization. Someone who, you know, this team just a few years ago was a playoff contender with the potential of a deep run.
They were 28, 21 points up on the Kansas City Chiefs, who've gone back-to-back Super Bowls. They were pretty close to beating them until they got blown out after halftime or second quarter.
This team has unraveled in front of everyone's eyes so quickly, and it's
this team absolutely insane.
This
franchise has fallen apart. I mean, it's going to take years to fix what Bill O'Brien has done to this team. And I don't know if they will at some point, but it's going to take a really long. They're going to be one of the worst teams in football for a while.
And it's so funny because it's not even the Texans in Houston. Every team is a mess right now.
George Springer out of the Houston Astros. Rockets have lost
Harden.
Westbrook was also there for like a year, and then he left.
The Rockets actually aren't doing terrible. They could sneak in as a playoff team, actually. But I don't know.
It's just the organizations themselves are just like
losing star people.
Yeah,
what's wrong with Houston? Star players just want to go out of Houston. What is Houston?
What's in the water down there?
Yeah, what's going on down there?
It's not going good right now in Houston. Now, speculation already around J.J. Watt is that he's got to come to the Steelers.
I mean, that's been the talk all year.
That's why we wouldn't go there.
T.J. Watt, he tweeted out that gif of The Rock in the WWE, and he's like, come on. He's like, come on. Let's go.
Come home.
Come play with us. Derek Watt has even expressed at times that he also wants to play with both of his brothers.
Even though Derek Watt will not actually play with his
exactly.
brothers.
Now, people will say that it is not a likelihood for J.J. Watt to come to the Steelers. Now, I'm going to outline a plan as to why it is. Okay?
Oh, wait. Is this going to be some elaborate scheme?
Here's the plan as to how J.J. Watt can get here. And I didn't think about it much, but this is what I think. J.J. Watt can come to the Steelers because with Ben Roethlisberger's $41 million on the cap right now, oh, no, it's going to get shrunk. Marquise Pouncey just retired. Cap money. Off the books a little bit. Alejandro Villanueva, free agent. You're not re-signing him to that big money deal. You have, I believe, it's the most cap space available in 2022. There's going to be a boatload of money to be able to spend in 22. So if you're TJ and you're JJ, TJ Watt's going to get paid. We know TJ's going to get paid. What if TJ, you know, he does one of those, he doesn't really do a take one for the team, but he realizes, look here. I'm going to get my big money deal now, this year. This is the year he's going to get paid, right, in this year's camp. What if I push just a bunch of money down the road to 22, make all the big money go to 22, let JJ sign for something dirt cheap this year, and then everybody gets paid next year? Because you don't have to pay the quarterback $41 million. You can pay both the Watt brothers $35 or $40 million and then be able to sign a backup offensive lineman for the extra money that you can save. You can go get three players with that money. Just kick the can down the road a little bit like the Steelers are accompanied to doing. It's going to take a little bit to not have that upfront money. But just deal with it. You want to play with your brothers? This is going to be the opportunity. And if you have that quarterback that can still play, like Ben, if you can, and you can surround him with stuff, don't put much money on this year's team, this season's team, 2021, that you can put more money towards people to surround Ben for Ben's last ride.
For the 2022 squad.
I mean, I like that plan you laid out because as soon as you started saying the money year is 2022, I knew where you were going with that and saying that, you know, allocate a lot of that money into next year. The only thing I have a question about is in terms of J.J. Watt is – what's his production level going to be like? Will he be able to get in there every day and every snap and be a disruptful pass rusher? But
that answer is I'm not
edge rusher.
I'm not too sure. He's not the guy that
he used to be. And yes, it's going to be a nice story. They're playing with the Watt brothers. But really, in the terms of the Steelers' success, how imminent of a role is he going to play?
You have Cameron Hayward. You have Stephon Tuitt. Usually one of the two get hurt. It did not happen last year. So, you know, you're not asking J.J. Watt to be the savior. You're not asking him to do what TJ's doing.
He's going to do what James Harrison. He'd come in for like maybe like a couple snaps a game.
You're not going to not play him. You're going to play. What you'll probably do is do some type of different sub package type of thing where you rotate the three in, like they did with Alualu a lot. If they would sign Watt, Alualu would be gone because, that guy can still play. So, or what you could do is you play your three front defensive linemen. You go to it. You put J.J. Watt in the middle, and then you put Cameron Hayward on the other side. You could even do that. Now, I know Watt's more of an outside guy.
He's always been more of an outside guy.
Yeah, so that might be a little bit of a changing of a role there. But, you know, the thing is, if good talent wants to play on your team, you're going to find a role for them. You're going to find a place to put them.
He's going to find a spot to play.
What you could even do is you can bump Cam Hayward inside a little bit, make him more of a nose tackle. Maybe not a traditional nose tackle.
No.
You could bump, you say you don't bring Bud Dupuy back. You put J.J. Watt on the other side, put TJ on the right, put J.J. on the left, and let the Watts go at it.
Watts up.
And then have Alex Highsmith just trailing behind as your other outside linebacker.
Just have him chilling there. He's just there.
I don't see any issue with that, any problem with that.
Neither do I.
Now, we've also seen good old Juju here, TikTok and dancing.
TikTokin'.
We've seen that he made a post, and he was trying to talk about, guys, where should I go? Where should I go? Where should I go build my brand? The Jets want him. We all know. I've been saying this for months. He's going to the Jets. The Jets are already advocating for him. But on a response to his post, Juju's mom said that the path is already written. But then he wrote hashtag Steeler. And that was weird because people don't really think that he's coming back to the Steelers because of our cap situation. A lot of the fans don't really like him anymore. He's dancing on logos. And it's just turned into a little bit of a dumpster fire, yelling at Permanis and the Browns Corvette in the locker room after the playoff game. It's becoming distractions, and it's sad because Juju is a talented slot wide receiver, but at the same time, I don't think a slot wide receiver should be your best receiver. I don't think he is the best receiver on the team. I think we've been over that as well. Golvash, do you think there's any logical path for Juju to come back in terms of the Steelers' need for no drama and the Steelers' dire cap situation still that they're dealing with?
I mean, he'd have to take a major pay cut if he did want to return, but I just can't see him. I just can't see him doing. I think he's going to be gone.
I agree. I thought for most part of the season, with the run they were going on, I thought that he would return. I thought it was going to happen.
I did
but
too.
But at this point, with the way the season ended, with the way everything went down and the controversy surrounding him about dancing and being a distraction and maybe a lot of things falling on his part of maybe the team's receiving performances, maybe that just spoiled this relationship with the Steelers organization. And, yeah, maybe that post, maybe by his mother, hinted at something, but it also could mean that the Steelers was the first part of the chapter and he's moving on.
Yeah.
That's just maybe my thoughts when I first heard of that. It's my interpretation. So
I mean, yeah, you can look at it that. That's certainly how I'm looking at it. But the Jets, as Austin said, it kind of makes perfect sense.
He wants to play with Sammy.
It's just a big market.
The USC connection.
It's just the ability to market himself in a big city.
He can Corvette himself all the way down Times Square.
All the way down to a 1-15 record.
Make a big legacy of it with those coaching staff. By the way, the Steelers are now the favorites to sign J.J. Watt. If you are favorites of betting, DraftKings has the Steelers as the official favorites to sign J.J. Watt. Now, obviously, when Vegas says something like that, sometimes they know what they're talking about.
Most of the time.
Other times, it's just, oh, wow, their brothers play there. Let's do that. Let's just say they're going to go there. And, you know, that's what a lot of us are doing, especially when
That's one of the main reasons we are talking about it.
Especially when, well, yeah, and I mean, when you're a good team and you have talent and, you know, I just hate when people bring up the cap room thing. You know how much the Steelers have done in the past to be able to change cap room with what this front office does? Omar Khan, the cap hit wizard, as you will, for the Steelers, being able to manipulate contracts and move money down the road and not have to affect nearly anything in terms of the team in that season until it eventually bites you in the butt a couple years later. I think it's possible to be able to make a deal for him, but at the same time, you need a running back, you need offensive line help, you need a lot. But
and you can't get everything in the draft.
No, you can't get everything in the draft, at least not at the moment. But time will tell what happens. We'll see where it goes. Let's transition into the Penguins now. Have not played in a while, thanks to the COVID situation with the New Jersey Devils. But they did play the Islanders last night, and they won on a Sidney Crosby, oh my gosh, goal, shootout. Wow, was it magical and just beautiful.
It was a vintage Sidney Crosby shootout goal, like the overtime, like the Winter Classic goal in Buffalo, and whenever he scored the first time he came up to Canada to play the Canadiens. It was one of his better shootout goals I've seen. It was a very pretty goal. Opened up Varlamov wide, froze him in the ice.
Freezing as much as the snow outside.
It is very cold.
Very cold.
He makes it look relatively easy. Of course. I mean, he goes in and does very similar to every time he goes in to do a shootout. He does a little stick handle, gets at least a five-hole open, but this time he goes far backhand.
He's kind of repetitive in the move. You kind of know what's coming, but sometimes you're still not able to stop it. And that's just how good he is. You can know what he can basically tell you what's coming, and he'll still score on you.
Exactly. But the Pens, once again, heading into extra time, back and forth all season long. They've really never been able to sustain a solid lead.
They cannot win a game.
It's very concerning. You cannot play hockey trying to fight for overtime all the time. I mean, I get it. It's points, but that's just going to wear a team down over because you're playing extra minutes. You're playing super hard for as long as those minutes are. I mean, I just find it relatively impossible for a team to find success trying to go to overtime and trying to win every game like that.
Have they won a game in regulation yet?
They're 6-5-1. I'm
assuming they have. Hold up. I'll try. And,
I don't think they have
not won in regulation.
No, they have not.
No, yes, they did. They late against the Rangers.
Oh yeah, they
that
did.
One day that with Gensel scoring the late goal. But that's been it. And that was a late game. And it's not even like they've won all their games by one goal. Yeah. Which is a problem.
Okay, hold on.
And the one thing that was nice I noticed from the game, Aston Reese, first game back, he scores, Zach Aston Reese. So maybe helping out that third line that once they're together, that Teddy Bluger, Brandon Tanev, Zach Aston Reese line is pretty solid. It's a very good third line.
I like Aston Reese a lot.
Arguably one of the best third line.
Aston Reese can't stay on the ice, though.
I like that as the fourth line.
It's a good third, fourth line. It's a dangerous line, and they're sneaky good, and they can score. Mm-hmm. Bluger is emerging as one of the better role centers in the league, one of your bottom six centers in the league. Aston Reese is just a get-to-the-front-of-the-net guy, sort of imitates a little bit of Hornquist's play, and I believe he was on the second power play unit running up in the front for that power play unit, and then Tanev is just speedy quick. He's everywhere on the ice. He's physical. He disrupts everything.
You're really high on Tanev.
I mean, he's been good. I mean, there's really nothing I can really complain about
When the Penguins signed Brandon Tanev to a 6-year contract, everybody as well as me wanted to lay in their casket and die.
It looked like
it was going to be the potential for what Jack Johnson's contract was going to be. You go, this Brandon Tanev guy, you're going to give this much stability for about what, $3.2 million or $3.25 something like that.
6 years, $3.2 million.
You're giving him that type of deal. I've never heard of him before. You know, people kind of disappear up in Vancouver. I just like, who is this guy? So you're going to pay him this much money and give him this much stability to be the fourth line, right wing. Yeah, it's worked out. I was wrong.
I can't even say I've thought about his contract since he signed.
I have not
like,
either.
Since maybe those first 3 weeks.
I'm like, oh,
really
we
haven't
no,
thought.
We have five more years of this guy.
It's not even like he's putting up numbers. He's just playing good, quietly good hockey.
No one's
really noticing.
He's a physical guy. He makes his play. He's a very disciplined guy. Makes his plays along the boards.
He's a penalty kill specialist. Yeah. He gets the work done.
He
normally leads the league in hits every year.
He's a quality contributor to the team.
He is a quality contributor.
Good role player.
I'll eat my words on that signing. I didn't like it to the day, but he's proved me wrong.
I like it, I know. So the Penguins made a signing of their own to the front office. Actually, two in the last week. Ronnie Hextall becomes the new general manager, and Brian Burke becomes the new president of of hockey ops.
Baseball ops?
I didn't think there was a hockey president of hockey ops until...
I didn't think there was. I thought that was just... You don't hear about it.
I thought it was just president of baseball ops.
And Penguins organization, there hasn't really been.
No.
Obviously, this position is relatively new, at least in recent memory, for the Penguins.
Yeah. So, two Flyer guys that I guess Mario loves Ekdahl. And when Burkle and Mario were trying to figure out who they wanted, and... The story is that I think it was Burkle reached out to Hextall, or maybe it was more, I think it was David Morehouse, reached out to Hextall, was talking, or I can't even speak, reached out to Brian Burke and was like, who do you think would be a good fit for this Penguins organization to bring in to become the new general manager? And he talked about a bunch of people. Ronnie Hextall's name came up. They decided that Hextall was going to be a good option. So then Morehouse ended up calling Burke back and said, Mario wants to talk to you. And, you know, when Mario wants to talk to you, it's like getting called to the principal's office.
You're like, unannounced,
like that. Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Mario was like, why don't you join our staff, too? And Berg was like, yeah, let me think about it.
Sure, why not? I mean,
and then he did. What do you make of it? What do you make of the
move? I like the idea because Hextall, he was very good at drafting.
It's not an idea. It's a reality now.
I know. Hextall was very good. Hextall was very good at drafting. He drafted players like Ivan Provorov, Shane Gostisbehere,
Carter Hart,
Nolan Patrick.
Carter Hart, Nolan Patrick. You know, I don't know if he had anything to do with it.
That Philadelphia team really good right now.
Yeah,
he put that together.
He was a big part.
He was a big part of that. And then
it was like when Ray Shiro – it was like when Craig Patrick drafted all the guys for the Penguins, all the stars, and then Ray Shiro got most of the credit.
And then Brian Burke's a great hockey mind. He's been in the league for – who knows how long since the Hartford Whalers were around, but he's a great mind. Putting two great minds together, this could be a turning point. But we might have to. The Pens are gonna have to face the fact that they're gonna have to see a lot of players they love. They might be gone by the time this trade deadline's over.
Yeah, and these two, like you said, great hockey minds. What I've heard so far is Hextall is more or less of a head down, grind type of guy. He stays quiet.
Keep your prospects. Ben Charrington.
Hextall just he does his work in quiet is what I've read a lot. But he was part of he was assistant GM in LA when they won the Cup in 2012. So he's had the making of a Stanley Cup team. So has Brian Burke in 2007 with the Anaheim Ducks. Building that one was more of a physical team, and that's obviously not what the Penguins are. They've been more of a skill team throughout the years.
Speed team as well.
So there was some question marks regarding both these guys and what type of teams they're going to build, because the Penguins are more or less built around speed and that skill in Crosby and Malkin. But
yeah, they don't have the speed now.
But there was there was comments that Burke had made saying that this Penguin team is just not competitive anymore.
No, not
which
to
is,
be able to win a championship.
Which is relatively true. We're seeing it right now. And
they can't win a game in regulation. They've won one.
If you can't win a game in regulation, you have some issues.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I think people are worried a little bit what these two might devise, but honestly, it's going to be reality very soon. So there's going to be players you might not like that are going to go, but these two guys probably will hopefully there's not a huge rebuild like Detroit in the NHL
or the
Pirates in Pittsburgh.
So yeah, the Pirates are doing the right thing.
Yeah, they are, but hopefully for the Penguins, because they're so used to winning, hopefully it doesn't come down to that for the Penguins, but might for a year or two.
When you still got Crosby and Malkin that are still playing, like Crosby's still high level, Malkin not as much, but when you still have those guys,
anything's possible.
You gotta figure it out.
And the one thing about Malkin,
you can't just completely tear it all down.
You just gotta try and find a way to compete until they're gone.
And the one thing about Malkin is which I'm sure Hextall, Burke, Burkle, Morehouse, Lemieux are all gonna realize very soon is this might be one of the last years you get the most out of trading Malkin. That might be a very big reason why they might move on from Malkin and send him out of Pittsburgh, because they can get a large return before his career is sort of washed.
He still isn't playing that well. I know he scored with 18 seconds to go last night to tie it up.
But it was also his typical just high point shot that just found seeing eye shot that found its way in. So, yeah, he's not really
– he's been invisible this whole year.
In terms of, like, literal production and going out
and
making plays,
him and Letang have just not been there. Him and Letang have been non-existent this year. I argue that Letang's been even worse than Malkin, because he's just such a defensive liability that it's hurting. because he just can't – you can't put him on the ice because every time I feel like he's on the ice, he ends up giving up a goal or turning the puck over and creating a scoring chances for the other team. I mean, not a good situation for the Pens whatsoever.
No, the Pens got to figure out what they're doing. They're just like – they're in the place that you don't want to be. They're just stuck in the middle.
They're stuck in mediocrity.
And that's what we've seen. That's why when people complain, oh, the Pirates are so bad. Oh, look, what are they doing? This fire Ben Cherington already. I haven't heard much of that, but people are like – I will never watch this team again. What do you want them to do? Be stuck in the middle, get no good draft picks, and
Do you want to watch teams get crushed in the playoffs all the time?
But then you always get the oh, well, they were bad for 20 seasons. They have a competent general manager now that is doing it the right way, accumulating all these prospects. The ESPN ranked them 14th in the prospect poll. Maybe because the prospects that they've acquired are all A-ball guys that you've never heard of before,
you never will hear them till they come up to the
MLB. And they didn't play last year because of the pandemic, and they didn't have a minor league season. So maybe that's why they don't have the eyes and ears all around those guys yet. They don't have the evaluations. They don't have the ability to technically rise in those prospect polls because they have barely been seen yet. Give it a year. This farm system is going to be ranked in the top five in baseball. It's going to happen. Kumar Rocker will automatically jump them 5-6 spots in the rankings. And then they'll be bad enough that they'll be able to get Elijah Green in the 2022 draft, hopefully.
Big brain plays. That's
the way you got to go. But back to the Pens. I just feel like,
And that's also another benefit of Hextall, because that can replenish the Pens.
You can replenish the Pens, yeah. I just think that and that means don't trade your first-round picks anymore. I've been saying that for years. Stop trading these first-round draft picks. Why would you trade a first-round pick for Kasperi Kapanen? I don't understand that when you can package it around other types of pieces. If this team can find a way to try to compete while also rebuild, which I mean, is hard to do.
It'd be really impressive.
It could have. I mean, you've been able to trade some old, aging veterans, or maybe guys that have fallen out of favors, like trading Kessel and getting P.O. Joseph. P.O. Joseph looks good.
Looks really good.
I still don't like the trade of Patrick Hornquist at all for what you got back. Mike Matheson is now hurt, but he does not look very good.
He did not look very promising.
Colton Sevier is just a guy on
He's
a roster.
There. Healthy scratch.
And see, those are the type of deals like Hornquist. I know we don't have any years left, and he's got a contract. Maybe go get, do what the Pirates are doing and go get a lottery pick. You know, go get a scratch-off ticket type of guy. Somebody that's an A-ball that you can go and develop yourself. Go get a young guy, 19-year-old prospect, fresh into the system that you can take that you think has some potential and go develop him in your system. Something like that, instead of Colton Sevier for healthy scratch reasons.
Go gamble on somebody.
Yeah.
Gamble on somebody young.
And also,
don't gamble on Mike Matheson's awful contract.
Some of the guys they have also in the NHL potentially ready players, I mean, Drew O'Connor, Sam Poulin, if he would be ready to come up, Nathan Legere, they have guys that, I agree, if you go get a pick or go get a prospect, and there's guys that are going to be ready to come up and play anyways. I think the Penguins, they have a lot of guys that can mix and match into the roster, into their starting 12, but yeah, I don't agree with a little bit of an older guy that's just probably going to sit and not really be utilized. If not, why not flip him? And that's a wait and see with Hextall and Burke at the front.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of moves are going to end up being made with no ties because they haven't been tenured to them for too long. So I think some very cutthroat moves are coming the Pens' way.
Yeah, it's going to be intriguing. I always say interesting. It's intriguing.
We're changing it up.
For the Penguins, just to see what direction they go. Because I don't ideally see Hextall trading a bunch of guys at the deadline this year. I think, it's kind of a situation like Cherington dealt with. And I hate to keep going back to the Pirates. See what you got. You know what you think you had on the outside. Now you're on the inside and you get to see everything. Evaluate the team. Evaluate truly what you have and what you think you have based on an organization standpoint. And then make the move either next year or if you realistically think that by the deadline you know solidly what the direction is going to be for this team. Do it and don't hesitate. Pick a direction. Pick a side. It's what you usually got to do. Let's move to college basketball. The Black and Blue Bloods are down right now. Kentucky, disappointing. Duke, upsetting in terms of college
basketball.
Hey, I'm fine with Duke not being good as a UNC supporter. UNC, average, playing a lot of freshmen. Kansas, average. Michigan State, bad. What's going on with these teams? I mean,
did they not have the ability to scout and bring recruits in? I don't know what
it is. Definitely not that.
They have
the pipeline.
Yeah.
And they have the whereabouts to get guys. I don't think it's about prospects. I don't want to say coaching either, but it's just, I think it's a good topic
What could it be?
I think it's a good topic that maybe just that one and done era might be
is
fading.
The one and done era over. I think so. Now, that does not mean that there's not going to be one and dones. There will be
generational talents or really good players will be one and done.
But does the era of having one and done players, like on a Kentucky, like on a Duke, be able to plug and play those guys for a season and be able to win championships or be successful and win your conference? Because as we see right now, I know Michigan State is not typically a one-and-done school. They're 10th in the Big Ten out of 14 teams. They're 10-7. They're 4-7 in the conference. Michigan State. Like, what? Duke is also 10th. They're 7-8. They're on a three-game losing streak. They're 5-6. Coach K snapped at a student reporter for talking about a game in the future. They're bad. You're talking about Notre Dame. They're typically good. They're 8-10. They're bad. Pitt is above Duke. Pitt. Carolina's fifth. They're 7-4 in the conference. They're 12-6 overall. But, like, when you look at even the SEC and Kentucky, they're 11th in the SEC. Kentucky's always in the top two. They're 5-13. They're on a four-game losing streak. They're 4-7 in the conference.
I mean,
what? Alabama is dominating in basketball.
I think I saw a Twitter stat that the 13 most winningest teams in basketball are not in the top 25.
It's insane.
Like the 13th all time.
Yeah, the 13 all-time winningest teams are not in the
yeah,
top 25.
Yeah, like, you know, like the Dukes, Kentucky's, Carolina's,
the UCLA's,
Michigan State. Michigan is in the top three.
Okay, Michigan State then.
I think the biggest surprising one is, I think it has to be Duke. Out of all them, and Kentucky, the way they've been playing, their play has been terrible.
Not good
but
last
Duke,
year.
Yeah, Kentucky and North Carolina, they weren't that good last year.
Carolina sucked.
From what they were 2 years ago, the Blue Devils, to where they are now is so insane. With the prospects were just flowing. Zion Williamson, everyone wanted to go to Duke following Williamson.
Yeah, I remember going to
what happened.
I remember going to the Pitt-Duke game. Shout out to Tommy Allen for taking me to that game.
Thomas Allen.
We went to a lot of Pitt basketball games, and I remember seeing Zion. And I remember Zion in the middle of the game, breakaway tomahawk slam in the middle of the game.
That was probably depressing.
Zion, the whole entire arena was just like, whoa, this guy.
This guy's good.
This guy's insane.
This guy's good.
And that's what you expect
now,
at Duke is like these
high-flying,
physical, high-flying guys. And they have a lottery pick.
You expect success.
And what is that, Johnson? They have a lottery pick that
Duke is just not playing well.
Yeah.
They don't have that much of the talent. The COVID doesn't help. Coach K is just not being able to put it all together right now. Like I said, the Black and Blue Bloods, they're not getting it done. They're not getting it done this year. But the more experienced teams like Baylor, Gonzaga, Michigan are. And is that going to lead to the rebirth of teams, which it's kind of happened in the last couple of years. We've seen with national championship teams. I remember with the 2017 Carolina team, you had seniors in Kennedy Meeks, you had Hicks, you had Justin Jackson was a junior, but you still had key contributions from some younger players as well. But your core guys were mostly all seniors. You had Joel Berry was on that team. And
Joel Berry was so good. Joel Berry was
so good. Underrated.
Lethal shooter.
Yeah, and you see with Gonzaga, they're the most experienced team. They got all the older guys. They're good. Is it going to go back to teams that win championships or teams that are more experienced?
I mean, the experience is, I think it's an undervalued thing, like you said, in college basketball, being able, because if someone goes.
Villanova, another team.
Yeah, Villanova, another bunch of, I mean, the trend keeps going. I mean, unless you have a generational type talent, even then.
Virginia last year, another team experience.
Even then, that doesn't even matter.
Even with Duke, I mean, they didn't win a national championship with those, you know, star-studded players.
No. Who beat them? Wait, who? Michigan State beat them, didn't they? Who beat Duke whenever Zion was on? Was it Michigan State?
I don't know.
Can I
don't exactly remember.
Let me look.
But, it's pretty crazy, the fact that where we went from the Kentucky is so good, they have all these freshmen, to Duke, they have Jahlil Okafor, they have all these.
Jahlil Okafor was a monster.
He was in college.
He wasn't.
Kentucky. We have Willie Cauley-Stein. We're winning championships. We have De'Aaron Fox. We have Anthony Davis. Even going back that far, one and done guys. We're working now. It's just.
Yeah. He was looking. Davis was Kentucky, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Were Cousins and Wall?
Boogie Cousins and John Wall were also Kentucky. I believe that was the 2011 team.
They were one and done too,
or something
they?
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Lance Zierlein of NFL.com, to change some subjects here, was asked, where do you see J.J. Watt landing up? Lance Zierlein, pretty respected NFL journalist for NFL.com. He's also does a show in Houston. He said that his gut reaction is the Steelers or the Packers, returning to Wisconsin to play for the Packers.
It was Michigan State, by the way. I was right.
It was Michigan State. Was good Michigan job, Golbash. Great job. And we're going to transition into Golbash now. Golbash, you have a couple minutes now here. Give us a topic that you would like to bring to the table, Golbash. What would you like to talk about?
What would I like to talk
about? Yeah.
That's an excellent question. What would I like to talk about?
See, I knew I was going to catch you off guard here.
You really did catch me off guard here.
You didn't expect a topic to come from
I wasn't expecting it. Okay, so actually, would you rather – say the trade deadline comes.
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather ship Malkin
mm-hmm.
or Letang? One of them has to go.
Letang.
Who would rather go?
Letang?
I agree. I think it's Letang too.
I think it's Malkin.
Why?
In my opinion, like I said, the return is still going to be high. You're going to get potentially picks, prospects, and NHL players who are ready to just slot in right now. I think you let it go too long, you're not going to get that anymore.
I'm not too sure about that.
Letang, on the other hand, yes, you're going to get a decent return, but you got to look at the play out on the ice. Letang, yes, he's making some mental mistakes, a lot of them, but I still feel like his speed and his ability to get up in the play helps him a little bit. Malkin just looks slow. He just doesn't look like he necessarily, I mean, not that he not doesn't want to be there, but he's slow.
Partly why you got to trade Letang instead. If you're going to be able to make that decision, that's the right move for the team.
What?
Trade Letang, he's got somewhat value. He's just his value is just going to continue to decline.
I'm saying Malkin's in the same boat. I'm saying
I just think that is such a franchise altering move to be able to trade Malkin and do it with a competent head on your shoulders.
I mean,
to be able to see trading in my mind, trading Letang doesn't exactly say full on rebuild, but trading Malkin is a complete death sentence to any other. To a fan base, to the media,
they are saying that they are done.
It tells you that the organization does not believe that they can be competitive for the next couple of years.
They can't.
And what does that say for Crosby?
I mean, Malkin actually isn't performing terrible.
Yeah, but the stats are gonna be deceiving because if you look at his play on the ice, I mean, think about it. The Penguins
7-12 and -1, and Letang only has 5-11.
Crosby does not want Malkin gone.
I know.
And you cannot.
But guess what? You look at history. You look back in time. The Penguins moved on from Jaromir Jagr. They moved on from
They couldn't pay him.
Yeah,
and here's the same thing. Why not? We already
paid Malkin.
Yeah, but you can also. But they traded Jagr. Yes, they couldn't pay him, but also
he was traded because they couldn't pay him. If they could have paid him, they wouldn't have traded him.
Yeah, but you move Malkin in terms of monetary respects because you can then go out and sign some younger guys that can fill in. I mean, obviously, a lot of
Malkin
people don't want to see
Malkin is on a very team-friendly deal. compared to what a bunch of these other stars are getting.
He's still the highest contract on the team.
He is.
I know, and that just shows you how relatively cheap this team is.
Yeah. Crosby is still a top five player in the game, and he's making pennies compared to what McKinnon's contract is.
No, McKinnon's is
team friendly.
Or McDavid.
McDavid's
contract.
McKinnon's one of the cheapest contracts, one of the best contracts in
hockey. McDavid's contract is insane.
It's ridiculous. And then you have the Tavares, Marner, a whole bunch of players. They aren't even they are close to top 10, but they're making more money than McDavid.
I think when you look at the arguments between Letang and Malkin, you guys are laying out sort of a similar argument, but there's a lot more going in. Malkin, biggest contract, you can get rid of that. Malkin, he's been a liability on the ice. Yes, so is Letang, but find someone else that can you know, Malkin, yes, he's scoring, but he's scoring but just one timer. He's sitting but at the point and just
Ovechkin does that for Ovechkin's done that for 12 years. No one complains about it.
Yeah, but Ovechkin also has more fire under him right now. Malkin just doesn't look with the same fire he used to have years ago.
You can find plenty of defensemen that play like Chris Letang. Chris Letang is just an archetype for a good offensive defenseman. You can find plenty of people play like Letang. You can't find too many people that play like Malkin.
Yeah, but there's...
You can't.
There's definitely a way you can replace him with the way he's playing now. Now. We're not talking about years ago. We're talking about now. And I think Malkin has lost it.
He's one of the better performers on this team. I mean, I still think he's a viable contributor. And, what do you think you can get from a struggling Malkin right now? What do you think you could get?
You can probably get something. I don't think you can get much.
Yeah. But guess what? He's been atrocious in the playoffs the past couple years. And compared to Letang, yes, he's had his mistakes, but Malkin, no fire under him in the playoffs. He's not going to give you a lot left. Come playoff time, he's going to be invisible like he has been in the past. I'd rather go out and
say that as if they're going to make the playoffs.
Well, guess what? Malkin's going to be part of the reason why they don't make the playoffs.
No.
Get some guys who are going to be ready to go in and want to
Why the Pens will not make the playoffs is because they do not have a viable starting goaltender.
Yes.
They're
still already trying to get Marc-Andre Fleury back. They were trying to get him during the GM search. Jim Rutherford was trying to get him in the offseason. That's what I've been saying that for months. You're going to trade Matt Murray. Why don't you go bring Fleury back? What's the downfall to that?
It doesn't hurt.
No, especially when you have two average goaltenders. They're both average.
The thing is, those average, they're average as starters, but you turn them into backups, and they're really good.
Yeah.
For reasons unknown.
Yeah. But that's just
how it is.
All right, Golvash, would you like to start with your 1 minute of time to say whatever you'd like? All right.
My 1 minute of time is going out to the Baldwin varsity ice hockey team, who are still undefeated. They've lost one game in the past 2 years. You know, us being from Baldwin, you know, it's good to see a team that's finally dominating a sport. Not a lot of Baldwin teams have dominated the sports besides girls volleyball.
Yes.
No
girls volleyball.
No other team is really
and softball.
I mean, other than that, no other really Baldwin sports team has dominated the sport like this. Like a sport, they own it. They should have had the Penns Cup last year due to COVID protocols. And now they're running back a redemption tour. All the shout out to all the seniors who are going crazy, and the inline team too. The inline team is also very good. I also played inline, and that's also one of the hockey in general has been one of the better sports for this school in a long time. And so far, I'm proud of what the boys are doing. Keep it up.
All right, well,
Nate,
I'll move,
because I still haven't thought of what I want to say.
I'll move one level up.
I would also like to shout out my mother for the idea. She also texted me to do that.
Nice.
I'll take her. I'm
still thinking.
I'm gonna go level up in terms of schooling. I'm gonna go to the collegiate level, staying in Pittsburgh with the Pitt men's basketball team.
Mm.
Usually this segment's a little bit of a ranting segment, right? So I'm gonna go on a little bit of a mini rant here. All right. So the Panthers, third year with Jeff Capel. This team was primed to make a dangerous case in an NCAA tournament appearance. And they looked that way. I mean, besides the early loss to St. Francis, which was
bad,
terrible, they go on and they win some pretty big games. Sweep Syracuse on the year. And then they go in and they beat Duke.
Duke.
Surprising that was, anybody. That was one of the most dominant wins I've seen from this Pitt basketball team in years. Justin Champagne, Xavier Johnson, Ethel Horton, all these guys are stepping in. Their guard play has been terrific this year. It has been really good. And then you go and lose to Wake Forest. You go and lose to Notre Dame.
Tommy Allen.
You go to lose. Like, you're losing to
North Carolina.
North Carolina, yes, North Carolina.
Good team.
North Carolina has
terrible
the
team, terrible
North
team,
Carolina has
team.
The players and the coach. So that's a game that doesn't, you know, bother me as much. But it's like, this team is ready.
Nate,
yes, it's growing pains, but it's year three for
Jeff
Capel.
This is Nate's rant. Golvash, he's allowed to rant without interruption.
It's year three for Jeff Capel. They should not be losing these games like Notre Dame and Wake Forest. This team is ready to make the tournament, and they are not playing like it. They have the front court. They have solid players in the front court. Not a great front court, but they also have tremendous guard play. And Champagne is one of the better players in the ACC and one of the better players across the country right now. He has been tremendous and phenomenal all year long, basically recording a double-double, averaging a double-double all year long. And then they go and win against Virginia Tech, another ranked team. So what is going on? There's no consistency. And I think that's been the overall atmosphere and theme of Pitt athletics.
That is what
it is. Inconsistency and mediocrity. And I think that's what they're stuck in. And I just think it's just – head scratching to see this team be able to compete against some of these really good teams, and then they can't win the games they need to win.
Golvash, what's your rebuttal?
That was exactly what I was going to bring up. That just sounds like the epitome of Pitt collegiate sports. Always they'll bring your hopes up. You're like, oh, this is the team, this is the year we're able to do it, and then they go lose the games to teams that are they play down to their competition, and they lose to teams that they should not lose to.
Yep. Yeah. Roy Williams has that drip, though, in those shoe game. You ever see shoes? He always rocks these Jordans. They're always cool. They're always really cool.
Jordan probably gave them to him.
All right, NFL fans, I've heard enough. You've heard enough. I've heard enough. Let's not talk about this anymore. Tom Brady is the best of all time. It takes a lot from a guy from Pittsburgh, Steeler fan and all, his whole life, to be able to come out.
A Foxborough guy.
To be able to come out and say that. But Tom Brady... what he did this season was absolutely insane. He leaves New England, where the credit was going to Belichick. Belichick's system. Brady is a system QB. You're right. Brady is the system. He brought the system to New England, or from New England to Tampa Bay. Brady is the system. Not Belichick. Not the culture of New England. Brady is the culture.
Yeah, Brady was the
when
culture.
Brady took his talents to Tampa Bay, taking his talents to Florida, everybody looked at it and said, okay, nice story. Maybe you'll win a couple games. Maybe you have a great first year like Peyton did in Denver, but they're not going to win it all. This team don't have it. This team was an 8-8 team with Jameis Winston, was just okay, and was just a average team. Tom Brady went there, and yes, there were growing pains early on into the season. There will always be growing pains. Goes through the whole entire year, goes to the playoffs, beats a Washington team with Taylor Heineke.
Who plays very well.
You're saying, they didn't play anybody. Then they go and beat Drew Brees in the Dome after the Saints smacked them in two games during the regular season. I thought it was over.
I thought it was over.
I did not think Tampa Bay was going to be able to win in the Dome. Then they go up to Green Bay and beat Aaron Rodgers, who wins his third MVP, is having a phenomenal season. They're at home. They do have some fans. They're playing phenomenal. Their defense is playing okay. What does Tom Brady do? He goes and doesn't even make that a competitive game. And then the Super Bowl, just like the Super Bowl against the Rams, was another yawner, another laugher. It's just Tom Brady just meticulously getting the ball down the field. Nothing fancy about it. Just long drives. Easy drives, just going down there and just easy, simple. It's Brady. This is just what he does. And people are already complaining. Oh, well, Brady, look what he's doing on those boats. They're parade out there. He's throwing the Super Bowl trophy off of a boat. Brady is having he's walking off that ship drunk. He's just kind of moving around, saying it was motion sickness.
It's goat things.
It is goat things. And why are people talking about this in a negative light? Brady has won his seventh Super Bowl more than any organization. We are watching greatness, and you have to accept it. You have to realize it. Okay, Brady is the GOAT. I know that there was cheating going on early in the 2000s. Don't try to tell me Patrick Mahomes, if he wins five championships in a row, is better than him. Brady at 43 beat Mahomes in the prime of his career, and it wasn't even a competitive game. I know the offensive line issues were bad for Kansas City. Don't give me that. They can adjust. It was a crazy situation that is going on right now. Tom Brady is the best football player we've ever seen, and you can still not like the guy,
but you have to respect it. You have to respect it.
You have to respect what the greatness of Tom Brady is, and we'll never see anyone like him again.
I can't agree more.
I agree as well. So
I mean, and back to the Super Bowl. Shout out to Todd Bowles.
Yeah.
And the defensive scheme. Who would have thought that Todd Bowles would have been one of the keys to winning a Super Bowl?
Right.
Look, after his botched Jets tenure.
You know he's the greatest when you could honestly say that if Brady was in the position of Mahomes, he would still probably win that game.
Yeah.
With that line, Brady would just dump it off. It's also not about his play, it's about his mind.
Well, Brady has never had a bad offensive line, like ever. Except his last year in New England wasn't great.
Except the years he did not win. You could say his lines were shoddy.
His lines wasn't that bad against Philadelphia.
They still made the playoffs just about every year he was there.
They made it every year.
I know they made it every year, but didn't win it every year.
You had such a great time interrupting us during our rants. Why don't we give you the first prediction? Who's traded first, Letang or Malkin?
Letang, well, we just discussed it. I think Letang's gone first. I don't think Letang... I think you can get a little bit more from Letang. You can get a decent return, and you can still be able to compete while still having Malkin. Yeah. And if Malkin doesn't perform well, you ship him off.
I think it's Malkin. I think there's a larger hole. I've already laid out my argument, but I think there's a larger hole if you trade Letang. I just feel that way. I know Malkin will leave a large hole, but his play has just declined so badly that it's almost like you have a liability every time he steps on the ice. And yes, Letang's sort of the similar way, but I think Malkin's worse. So Malkin goes first.
I don't think they make that decision yet. I think they're going to wait a little bit. I don't think any of them get traded this year, but when they do get traded, I think it's going to end up being Evgeny Malkin. Probably later than Letang, which means I think Letang's first. I just don't think that Malkin can go yet. I just don't see... I know it's been so popular. I don't think Lemieux will make it happen. I don't think
Lemieux will not.
Lemieux will not be convinced.
I think Lemieux can be swayed to let Letang go, but I don't think Malkin has a chance. I think Malkin and Sid will end up finishing their careers here.
Baseball Prospects announced their 2021 standings predictions for all teams in the MLB. The Colorado Rockies are projected to finish 60-102, while the Pirates 61-101. Who ends up being last?
For the
MLB, Colorado or the Pirates? Who's last?
That's a tough one. I say Colorado. They're gonna get smacked up at Coors Field. I mean,
They traded Arenado.
I think the Pirates will be somewhat confident. Maybe the youth carries them to a couple extra wins. But I mean, I see nothing in Colorado.
I think the one thing going for the Pirates is they're playing in a average NL Central. Like the NL Central doesn't have a lot of like that number one team that you're gonna see.
I think that's St. Louis.
St. Louis has reemerged because I mean they
picked up Arenado.
Yeah, they were declining, and now yes, with Arenado, that is very true. I think with Colorado without Arenado, they're gonna struggle mightily with the Dodgers and the Padres. I think that they'll probably end up last, in my opinion. I think the Pirates will find a way to win a couple more games than them.
St. Louis projected to finish 81-81. Interesting.
Really? I think the biggest
they have them finishing 500.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing with also Colorado is without Arenado, they lose a lot of like chemistry and their identity. So I think that's the biggest thing. The Pirates know their role right now and that they're in a major rebuild. Colorado just lost their key franchise player.
I was gonna say they're not gonna be able to score runs and they're gonna give up a lot of runs.
Right, especially in Colorado. You're gonna give up a bunch of runs. I also think the Rockies have a great chance of finishing last. I didn't think that before everybody started coming out with these projections, but the more I think about it, the more I think that they can.
And the more it makes sense.
But the more I want the Pirates to finish last. Do this best for the Pirates. What's next for the Steelers? What's the next move that they got to make? What do you think's the next move?
I think you got to – I believe you have to address the running back situation in the first round of the draft. You have to address the running back, I feel. And then second round and third round, you focus on linemen. Simple as that. And then if you see a guy you like, if you see some steals later on, you go for him. I think that's quite simple. I think we just need to get a running back.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, historically, the Steelers have not really done too much outside of the draft in terms of trading and going after guys. So I think it's going to come down to the draft. And I think I agree, running back. I think a lot of people would like to see Najee Harris or Travis Etienne in a Steelers uniform, at least give people a hope that the running game is going to be fixed next year. I think that's the biggest thing, and then you go for your linemen in the rounds after that.
Yeah, I think that the next move is probably another retirement, but I think it's going to be from Alejandro Villanueva. That's probably the writing on the wall that I think is going to be next to the Steelers in terms of another offensive lineman that's going to be gone. But see what happens. Where will J.J. Watt go? Andrew Filippone says that if he wants to chase some rings, he'll go with the Packers. But if he wants to chase backyard football memories, he'll go with the Steelers. What do you guys think?
I think he's going to chase backyard football memories. I think it's too good. It's too good of a story to go play with all three of your brothers. I mean, I personally would do if I had a chance to play with my brother, I'd do it. So I can kind of see where he's coming from. But I don't know if rings are that important to him.
Yes, they are. He said he wants to go win a ring.
If he wants to go win a ring. He could also do it in Steelers if we draft well, before we get a decent QB.
If they can put any offensive coordinator with Roethlisberger, Matt Canada, if he can turn this offense around,
if Canada can turn this offense around, this team could has a chance at it.
I think out of the two, he goes to the Packers. I just feel like something's going to happen with the Steelers, and it's just not going to happen. I just don't think it's going to work out for some reason.
I'm taking the feel-good story.
I'm taking the championship rings.
I think there's a very good chance he shows up at the Steelers. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think it's too good to be true.
I agree. Like, there's something that's just not going to work out. I just feel that way.
It seems too good to be true.
Oh, no, it's weird to ring chase with the Packers when they can't even make it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But they have the team still, so.
They do have the team, but I don't know. Aaron Rodgers can't seem to get past that hump now. Now that Brady's in. Also, can we talk about the similarity between Brady and LeBron? How they were both slandered for having the easy conference, and then they go to the tougher conference and they go win. And now they say that the NFC's weak. You haven't heard that? You haven't seen
no,
this?
No, I've heard.
The NFC is weaker than the AFC now.
Really?
With Buffalo, Kansas City, a Steeler team that was all right, Cleveland on the rise.
Baltimore competitive. Baltimore's competitive.
Baltimore's competitive. Tennessee was pretty good this year. San Diego is going to be good next year. They're in L.A. They got Justin Herbert. They're going to be really good. So I think that it's fair to say with Green Bay and then Tampa, that's it. What are the Saints going to be next year without Drew Brees?
Well, I guess
also you got the NFC West.
The NFC East sucks.
NFC West is really good though.
You have the Rams, 49ers, I think Seahawks.
The West makes up for the East, I think.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. All right, shout outs.
And then you have what? Then you have the Vikings that are okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then shout outs. I'd like to shout out my mother for texting me to shout out the hockey teams.
Very smart idea.
I'd like to shout out my father, my mother and father who are both listening. I'd like to shout out Alex, who is probably sleeping right now instead of going to his class. Wake up, loser.
I think they're actually going to school now.
They are? Okay, then he's probably in there.
I love how you don't know that.
Well, I don't know what time he goes. I know they go four times. I believe they go four times now.
Yes, they do. They go four days a week.
What a great
concept. Go to school 4 days a week.
might as well go for all five. But thank you guys for tuning in, and hopefully I'll see you guys soon.
Shout out to the parents as well, mom and dad, for listening as always. Thanks for always supporting the show. Shout out Corin as always. I don't know if there's anybody else listening, so. Shout out to those people for always supporting and sending their love.
Yeah, I don't know who's listening. I mean, I don't even know dad. I don't even know if my parents know the new Showtime.
You never know who's listening.
I think my dad's probably, he might be listening. I don't really know.
Shout him out anyways.
Shout out everybody. Shout out everybody, the fam.
Shout out Muffin.
Shout out everybody that makes the Wiffle League possible.
Documentary coming soon.
Documentary maybe. Coming soon, maybe. big debates with Wiffle going on coming up. It's going to be very interesting. We're going to see what happens. And shout out to the people that might be listening that we don't know who are listening. You know who you are. We don't really exactly know.
We don't know who you
are.
We
think we might know who you are, but we're not really sure. So if you're listening, thanks to you. Thank you, as always. Music manager, I know you don't have any music ready, so.
Actually, I do.
Okay.
Let me get to it. Let me scroll.
We went over.
I will get there.
Today, by 5 minutes today on the show.
We went over?
We did.
That is
over. Let's play over and unders.
That is inexcusable. Over, under?
Over, under on Goldbach having the music ready. Over. Nice song choice, dude.
Thank you. It's a great song.
This is Baldwin and the Berg on a Friday in February. It's so cold out there.
It's a little chilly.
I'm waiting for March and April and May, then we'll be done.
Do we wave to the tourists?
And then we'll wave to the tourists. Wave. Hello. They're waving. We're waving. They did not wave. Actually, the tour guide waved. That is the end of our show. It is the middle of February. This is how bored we are. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Golden.
We will see you in a week, and we will predict how I will do at bowling. How fun.
Yes.
See you next week.